Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As nearly 50% of the human population and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KKFI Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, volunteers, staff, management, or sponsors. Good afternoon. I'm Sharon Lockhart, and I'm here with Ebony Johnson, and we have a trainee in the background who's going to help on the board today named Craig LeBeau. And Ebony's going to introduce her guests, and then she's going to do some news.
I am. Thanks, Sharon. And we'd like to say hi to Amy, who's out today. And Sharon, you mentioned the other week, Amy's on a bit of a sabbatical,
yes.
Speaking-wise, but just hi to Amy anyway. And we are going to talk about a bit of a sensitive subject, but one that I think is necessary. So we're going to attempt to be as honest as possible and respectful at the same time, but speak to something that's important to my own culture, which is what we're dealing with youth, in particular Black African-American youth and the education system. And we have a few educators that are here with us in studio. I'll introduce more in depth after the news, and we have one on the phone with us as well. But we'll go to some news, and then we'll come back and dive into the topic. Virginia Raggi has been elected Rome's first female mayor, sweeping into City Hall on the ticket of the populist five-star movement with the backing of over two-thirds of voters. For the first time, Rome has a female mayor in an age where equality of opportunity remains a mirage, the 37-year-old lawyer said in her victory speech. I will be a mayor for all Romans. I will restore legality and transparency to the city's institution after 20 years of poor governance. With us, a new era is opening, PRI reported June 20th. Stokely Carmichael, a charismatic young civil rights activist, had just been released from a Mississippi jail when he first uttered the cry, Black Power. It had been his 27th arrest during the long struggle, and his phrase transformed U.S. race relations. Carmichael's words, spoken 50 years ago, quickly gripped the national imagination. Many Blacks heard in them a bold call for political self-determination. Many whites feared that they would turn into a call for violent retribution. This new Black consciousness movement swept the nation, much the way young African-American activists now rely on social media, public demonstrations, and grassroots organizing. The Black Lives Matter movement, which also recognizes the systemic nature of inequality in American society, echoes Black Power's stirring call for an end to institutional racism, mass incarceration, violence, and war. Black Power activists braided together ideas from socialism, radical feminism, Marxism, nationalism, and Pan-Africanism into a panoramic critique of American democracy. In so doing, they anticipated the Black Lives Matter movement's focus on the ties between the personal experiences of race, class, sexuality, and gender, and the abstract issues of institutional, legal, and political oppression, Reuters reported June 21st. And I like to say in particular that that last piece speaks to our first segment here on education and kind of the idea of equality and perhaps some of the inequality that we're currently experiencing. And we will start with introducing our guest, one of our guests, Katina Taylor, who is here in studio with us, has worked in both public and private schools for the last 16 years, as well as parenting a charter high school student herself. Her educational background includes a Juris Doctorate and a teaching certificate in secondary social studies. Good afternoon, Katina.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for inviting me in.
Thanks for being here. And online, on the phone with us, Shariki, are you there? I thought I heard her. One moment. I may have to let me go to that. But Shariki is there. One second. We'll have to get adjusted here. But Joe, you want to do your own introduction, so I'll let you do that while we connect and make sure I'm okay with Shariki.
Okay, my name is Joe Craig. I have been an educator since 2000. I have a background of business management, BS in business management, master's in education. I've been a foster parent for 15 years. I'm a high school business teacher in the Kansas City area.
Thank you so much to the both of you. Now, I will say that, Katina, this started the kind of the birth of this conversation. We were both at a community conversation, and I was talking about my sister having a struggle with what to do with the education for my nephew, who is 7 years old, and whether or not he should continue to go to the public school systems that he was going to. Should she homeschool him? What should she do? Because she was having some challenges with not necessarily what he was learning, but cultural differences amongst his teachers. And she said some of her friends at the same time had the same issue as far as what do they do with their black students and their white teachers and some of the disconnects. And so I'd like for you and, you know, just to chime in, Joe, as well, to just speak to kind of your experience as educators. And, you know, can a white teacher really parent a black child in a way that is inducive of a really good education?
So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up that point. And we'd have to go backward before we could actually come into 2016, where we find ourselves today. Because when I was in school, when many of us were in school, many of our teachers looked exactly like us. So they had an opportunity to develop personal relationships with mm-hmm. us. They understood the community in which we came from because mm-hmm. they lived and were embedded in that particular community as well. We could go to the grocery store, to church, to the doctor's office, just out walking your dog, and you would see those teachers. But today we find ourselves in an educational environment and atmosphere where 85 to 90% of our teachers are white women under the age of 30. And they oftentimes don't live in the communities in which they teach. So I don't necessarily want to say there's a lack of compassion, but there certainly is a lack of understanding for many of the things that those African-American students are experiencing and facing on a day-to-day basis. And if you go to a school of education, you are not going to get any instruction on how to really deal with those particular issues, how to build those relationships. And so that is where we find ourselves. And students aren't going to produce for you when they feel that you don't care. Mm. And so we mm-hmm. have to be real about that. I think one of the things that we have to do if we want to shift that trajectory is we, as black educators, are educating the profession as a whole. We have to even be talking to our own students about going into the profession. And we don't do that enough. And so until we start seeing that type of change and a commitment to those that are there today to be coming from a culturally relevant pedagogy. And that doesn't mean just buying some books where kids see themselves in the books. No, it means how do you understand and relate to an entire culture of students if, in fact, you seek to serve them and serve them well.
Mm. You know what, Katina, I agree with you 100%. So I think what you're talking about is building the relationship with the child so you know where that child is coming from. I'll say this, and this is one of the things that I'm a big proponent on. We have a six-year-old child, male or female, and from the age of 6 to 18, we as African-American people and parents allow other races to mold our children. Mm. And I don't agree with that philosophy, but I will say this, that 85, as you say, 90% of the people that are going to education now are white young females that do not know our children. I will also say that what makes me different, like you, is that we get to know the child. I mean, how many people, you go to the doctor, and before that doctor can diagnose your problem, they got to get to know you. Mm. And I think before you can educate a child, you got to get to know where that kid is in the learning process, what they have to deal with before they get to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem mm-hmm. that's going on now.
Now, Joe and Katina, my one of the things that my sister dealt with as well is she, at that the school system that my nephew was in, she started to feel as though her son was being used in a way to where it's like, oh, okay, he may need extra help. Like, you know, speaking of getting to know, where it's kind of, oh, yeah, you know, kind of like the black anger and mm-hmm. all of this other kind of stuff. And so getting to know me is not pitying me, but Absolutely. Seeing me as another human being just like you. And we have the same issues. We deal with them in different ways, but everybody deals with all of the same, you know, emotions and dynamics, what have you. But I think that was another issue that really she was just struck with. What do? I want my child to have a great education. At the same time, I do not want my child to be looked at as an at-risk youth when he's not. Or, Absolutely. You know, all these other stereotypes where it becomes a, well, let me help you, as if you're the one, you know, help in a negative sense, where mm-hmm. it's a superiority right. that's going on.
Absolutely. And it's a many, especially young African-American young men, black boys, are being misdiagnosed as special ed. They are saying that they have psychological issues. We're over-medicating them then to combat these labels that we put on them. And because parents don't know their rights and responsibilities mm-hmm. or not asking those questions, then, you know, we feed them from school, you know, the school to prison pipeline happens. But again, going back to being culturally having that culturally relevant pedagogy, knowing a child, knowing an entire culture of people, where we then are not having teachers make excuses for them, having that pity, setting low expectations mm-hmm. because of what they're saying is, you poor child or you black child, we know you need some extra help. No, our children are just as capable of anyone else, and they have the ability to learn, and we have to set the bar high to do that. And so, one, the individual teacher has to deal with an issue, but two, leadership in schools have to change in which the way they think as well, and hold the teachers accountable. But parents have to be empowered to be their own child's advocate. Mm-hmm. And so they need to know not only their rights, but their responsibilities, and then go in armed to be an advocate for their children, so we're not seeing those things happen. And when we start doing those things, I wish it was a magic bullet or a silver bullet yeah. to eradicate the issue, but there is none. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex issue. And what I'm hearing more and more, I don't think we got Sister Shariki on the phone, but I know she's
Shariki, are you there? Shariki, are you there? Gosh, I thought she was.
And she's a big advocate in homeschooling. And so we find across the country right now, a lot of black parents have pulled their children from the public school systems and said, no. If you're going to miseducate our children, we'll educate them ourselves. There's another drive to start our own schools and to actually sustain them and grow them and build them so that our children are getting exactly what they need. And if that needs to be the answer so that we send a message to the larger community that we are going to educate our children, we have an expectation that they're going to be educated well, then those are some of the things that we need to do.
But I want to go on another route. I hear from a lot of educators that it is not my job to civically, or I don't know, to raise your child. I'm equipped academically to teach your child, but it's not my job to raise your child. Now, like I said, I've been in education since 2000, and I saw a lot of parents, grandparents, you know, there was a male role model in the house. And as we have approached, you know, 2016 as we are now, I see lack of the male role modeling in the homes. And I will have to say that most of the African-American children that I've seen be successful has a background, a network of support that when they get to school, they're more readily able to behave, adapt, and learn. But I do see a vast majority of white teachers, male or female, having the inability to connect with that child. With the advent of social media now, the kids now, they're smarter than us in different kind of ways, and they can tell if a person does not have their best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. That's why every child, regardless of their color, ethnic background, I get to know that child. That mm-hmm. way, I can have some dialogue with that child on how they learn, and I can mentor and model the behavior that I want them to do, thereby get them to learn.
Okay, Shariki, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yay, okay. So I'm so glad this. Now, let me give a brief introduction, and thank you so much for being patient and working with us. Shariki Uganisha is an activist in the African communities with a focus on the prison system and human rights. She is a paralegal and a member of the Independent African Centered Homeschool Network. So you've been listening in, and we want you to just let it go with your thoughts and comments about this topic. Thank you again for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me and Hotep to Katina, and I didn't get the brother's name.
Joe.
Who?
Joe Craig.
Joe, okay, nice to meet you. As I heard Katina saying is about, I'm an advocate for homeschooling. I went to a Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo in 2014. I've been advocating pulling our children out of stupid factories for at least 25 years. So that inspired me when I went to that expo. And I came back and called for a conference to the Conscious Sisters and Brothers. Let's come together. And on August the 17th of 2014, we had a conference. And out of that conference came the Independent African-Centered Homeschool Network. And we met on a monthly basis. And we researched during that time the state law, Missouri state law pertaining to homeschooling, and made sure we was in compliance with the law. We also did research on trying to find an African-centered curriculum, in which we found Brother Samari Kamari out of New Orleans, Louisiana, with Kamali Academy. We purchased his African-centered curriculum and workbooks, and on May 19th, 2015, we introduced IA Academy and Communal Center to the community, and opened for enrollment on August the 17th of 2015 for ages 3 to 6, because those are important ages that we need to reach our children. And as I heard the brother saying about how we allow the enemy, we give them 12 years to destroy our children's minds.
Amen to that.
And then have the question to ask, what's wrong with them? You know, and until we say we are going to reclaim the minds of our children, we are going to continue to see them systematically destroy their mind. And we just don't have the will, many of us, because at this Liberated Black Homeschool Expo, this is the fifth. It's every third weekend in July, and it's the 15th, 16th, and 17th. I was, you know, inspired and re-energized to see all of these black people, and it's for black people to come together, network with other brothers and sisters that are homeschooling, find material and build. And that's what's going on. And you might, just because the, you know, corporate control media don't put that out there, and they're not supposed to, you know, that's not their job to tell us about us, you know, you're not going to know that this is going on. But there are millions, they said at the conference, at least 2 million black people in this country are homeschooling their children. And so we are a strong advocate for homeschooling our children ourselves. And it doesn't take much. You know, we got these mega houses. I know you got one room in there. You know, because our ancestors looked upon the world as our classroom. Yeah. Brother Sauti used to talk about you can teach on a grassy knoll. You know, We use what's in our hands if we will.
Thank you for that message, Shrieky. I do want you all to speak more to, Shrieky, you mentioned an African-centered curriculum. And yes. More, you know, we've talked about the educator, you know, themselves, whether the teacher is black or white or what have you. But the material that's being taught sometimes can be very non-inclusive to where at some point we may not realize it consciously, but if I keep hearing stories about people that do not look like me, then it builds something in me of, well, where am I? Like, that I'm missing, or I'm not this or that, or, you know, something of another nature. And so I think it's important to kind of speak to the context of, you know, well, somebody is deciding this is what should be taught, and how do we deal with that and educate our children? And if we choose to, if we can't feel like at this time we can't homeschool them, or, you know, need to use the public school systems, how do we make up for that, or how do we deal with it to say, hey, the school system as we know it needs to change?
I think that the curriculum needs to be relevant with what is going on in society right now. For example, I teach business courses, and I relate the curriculum to what's going on in America right now. Kids don't really know about the past, but I think that they care about the future. I think what's happening in education right now, the teachers are comfortable teaching what they're used to teaching, and they're not used to going outside the box. Where the kids today, you just can't put a book in front of them and expect them to learn. You got to make it active, and you got to involve their culture to help them see the education and experience it.
And I jump in here real quick and say, you know, this system, unfortunately, it's a Western system, and we seek to Westernize the entire world, right? Mm. Our way is the best way. So if you think that at any point you're going to see someone, your own story, you're sadly mistaken. Mm. You're fooling yourself. Now, parents do have options here. Mm. And, you know, these systems, you know, are built to oftentimes subjugate, further oppress, and build a class of people that will continue to move the upper echelon, so to speak, forward. They are training them to be their workers. Mm-hmm. So we have to be comfortable having uncomfortable conversations, mm-hmm. and calling out truth. Mm-hmm. And so I would suggest that our curriculum certainly has to evolve. But the only way I always suggest to parents, you have two weapons that you can use. At the end of the day, money is green, and these school systems don't operate unless they have bodies in the seats. So even if parents were advocates, revolutionaries on today, and they decided we're going to take our children out of these schools for 3 days, they're going to understand that parents are saying we need a seat at the table and a voice in the development of the curriculum, and our children need to know the truth. We have this country, the West, has hidden intentionally the history of our people. Mm-hmm. And we hear it and we see it on a constant basis, even changing maps so that we can say Egypt is not a part of Africa, and changing our artifacts so that when we see pictures of Nefertiti, she doesn't look like an African woman. That is atrocious to do a group of people that way. And so until our children can connect and understand and develop the pride, the agency, the self-efficacy in knowing that they come from a rich history, that they didn't just get plopped down in the universe starting at slavery, then we're not going to see a change or a shift in their mindset so that they understand that they have value and worth. Another thing is, if you're not going to pull them out, you know, for 3 days so that you can have an impact, then you need to be showing up at every curriculum and instruction meeting. saying this is what needs to be taught. And the teachers also should be held accountable. And they should be saying that our children deserve more than
that. Okay, Sharon, I know you have a question, but Katina, you mentioned something there, and I just want to say, in case of someone's listening, how do they know about the curriculum meeting, instruction meeting? What is that?
You start by just calling downtown, you know, for Kansas City. I mean, we have people from Blue Springs, Lee Summit, listening in all over. You go to charter schools or whatever. You call that school and you say, when is your board meeting?
Okay.
You call that school and you say, when is the next curriculum and instruction meeting? Because we want to change what's happening and what our children are being exposed to. And then you have to have other parents with you. Mm-hmm. So this is where advocacy comes from. Why are we resting on our laurels and expecting someone to do something for us?
Mm-hmm. So you can call and call your board, the school district, whomever, and ask for the next curriculum and instruction meeting.
Absolutely.
Ask when that meeting is, and that meeting is open.
It should be open, absolutely.
Okay, that meeting is open. Okay, Sharon.
Well, before this show started, I said, well, I'm not going to have anything to say. I'm not equipped to join in this conversation at all. But something that was said just kind of gelled with me about how we're taught as a young woman. When I went to school, there were no females in, except our teachers were mostly female, and I had some wonderful female teachers. But the history, I mean, the where were the women that we were being taught? And it just suddenly came to me, of course, without the black faces in the curriculum, you're taught you're nothing. Just like as women, we're still taught we don't count. We're nothing.
But see, here's the deal, though. It goes back to curriculum, which I think that most, I'll say some, non-black teachers are not comfortable getting outside of their mix. They're going to teach what they know. And if how they were raised is what they are going to teach, that's how they're going to teach it. But it's up to the parents, as this young lady said here, to get involved in that school's mix to see what's going on. I got some parents that don't even know what grades that their kids get in school. I mean, go figure.
I don't know, Sister Sharika, I know she wants to say something. I know it's burning in her spirit, probably. But before you jump in, Sister Sharika, you know, I'm gonna respectfully disagree and say that, you know, there are not teachers that are willing to step outside the box. I'm one of those teachers and have been for almost 20 years. So I don't just stick with the curriculum because I understand about rigor. I understand about truth. And I understand that these children need to be building self-worth, efficacy, and agency. They need to be able to see where they come from so that they know where they're going. And there are other teachers out there like that. Now, what happens oftentimes, though, there are repercussions, there are ramifications. You'll be called in. Why are you teaching that? Don't do that. But at what point then do you stand firm and say, I'm doing what's in the best interest of children? Mm-hmm. Forget the adults, but I'm doing what's in the best interest of children. And again, when we talk about the hidden history of our people, then, you know, oftentimes it's the teachers and the parents don't even know the history and the truth ourselves. Mm-hmm. Many of us are learning right now, but as we learn, we can teach. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I know Sister Sharika probably got a lot to say.
Well, when you all first started with it, I was listening to that, and I thought about the jazz song by Les McCann, Make It Real, compared to what? So you were saying about the children don't see themselves. Quite naturally, if you don't see yourself, and the public food system, as Brother Samari calls it, it reinforces white supremacy in its teaching. Okay, while you have a white child there and being taught that they did everything, and here telling black people your existence started with slavery, we came and rescued you and brought you here. And since we don't have communities, since we're talking about all of this that the parents should know and what the parents don't know, we have to understand about these parents trying to keep a roof over their head, trying to keep their children alive, okay? Mm-hmm. Where do we step in and help? And that's what we have to be about. Since we don't have communities, we live in zones, okay? We don't have, you don't even talk to your neighbor next door. You're not concerned about the children next door or what's going on. We're scared of the children, okay? And until we, those of us that know, the conscious, I like to put that about the conscious, because it's, I hold us conscious to a higher standard, because we're supposed to be the vanguard. The people are not going to come to you and say, let's fight. It's about you taking that to them and educating them about what their options are and what their rights are. We don't know. You can't teach what you don't know, and you can't lead where you yourself won't go. We have to put deprogramming programs in place when we when the children return, for those who are not ready for homeschooling. Have a deprogramming program. When they come home, you can then start deprogramming them, because that's what they need. We have to counter the white supremacy that's being instilled and destroying our children's minds. We have an obligation and responsibility to our children, because they're watching us. They're watching us, y'all. And one day, we're going to be somebody's ancestors. Now, what you want to say about you?
Yeah. It we makes me... Sister Shrieky, it makes me think of John Singleton's movie Higher Learning, and at the end when he said unlearn, and the importance of not realizing sometimes how, when especially, you know, children are being children, when you're a child, you do and think and act and speak as a child, and you absorb and say, okay, the adult said it's this way, all right, you know, until you get older and start making decisions for yourself, especially as it relates to your own education. But I do want, if you have information on, if a parent wants to find, an African-American parent wants to find more African-centered curriculums, where are some resources that they can go to find that information?
To Brother Samari Kamari's Kamali Academy, K-A-M-A-L-I, Academy.com. Excellent.
Okay. Say that one more time, Shrieky. Say that one more time, Sister Shrieky.
It's Kamali Academy. That's K-A-M-A-L-I Academy.com.
Okay.
And Brother Samari has now repatriated to Ghana, West Africa. So, but you can still go to the website and get his book, the African Center Curriculum. And it goes from, I think it's pre-K to the 12th grade. Okay,
thank you for that. Joe, did you have a comment?
No, I just think that we are in an exciting time for our African-American children to start learning.
Yeah.
I think that all kids can learn. I tell the kids every day, your mind is like a computer. You got to put stuff in, you get stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to be an educator.
Yeah. Katina, any other?
It can be exciting. It can be frustrating.
Yeah.
It can be challenging. All of those types of descriptions in an era where we are educationally. We do know that what we've been doing is not working.
Mm-hmm.
We have failed several generations. And so now we have to ask ourselves, what type of change are we willing to make, and what sacrifice are we willing to make to see that change through?
Yeah.
And so we have to be courageous. We have to be bold, going back to saying we have to be comfortable having uncomfortable conversations and getting to the root of this thing. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm an educator, but I've decided, you know what? We need our own school, and we need to support that initiative. No matter what has happened in the past, what are we going to do moving forward? And so, whether it be homeschooling, whether it be a charter school, a private school, Dreams, which will be a new school launch in Kansas City soon, we have to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and gear this thing ourselves. Because if we're waiting for people to do it for us, it is not going to happen. And we have to provide support to, like Sister Shrieky said, if a parent can't do, if they won't do, then those of us that know, then it is our responsibility. We are a people of community.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the village, be the village.
Mm-hmm. That's
and so we got to stop talking about it, and we got to be about it. And so I know I just talked to a gentleman on yesterday, and I know another gentleman, and I said, you know what, let's start building this curriculum out. You know, we can supplement it, we can talk about it, but let's build this thing out so that we are giving our children truth and that's what they deserve, that's what they need. And that's where we set high expectations and say, this is where we're moving. We can do this. It's been done.
But
don't you think, though, the expectations should also start at home? I mean, because that is where that child sees that adult every single day. I mean, because think about this for a second. I have children that were not able to learn. And so I mentor them in 2 or 3 hours a week, 4 hours, whatever you want to call it. I'm able to get them to turn their cycle around and be avid learners. Now, I'm not the kids' parents, but I'm only saying that if I can change that kid's momentum, if you will, seeing them a couple of times a week, that parent, that guardian, that foster parent, that adult in that child's life should be able to help them get it together. I mean,
I hear you.
But if they can't, you're doing what you're supposed to. I hear you saying about you're not the parent. See, that an African-centered mentality is all of these children are ours.
That's right.
All of them.
Yes.
So we need to stop saying that. These babies are ours. And regardless of what is going on in the dysfunctional families, because if the truth be told, we all come from dysfunctional families.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still dysfunctional right now in the 21st century. Those babies are all of ours. And I commend you on what you're doing with them. And continue, my brother. Don't stop. Mm-hmm. Continue. But also try to, I mean, you never know what's going on with the family. You know what I mean? So try to even find a way to connect with that family and get inside there and try to see what's going on. You know, you never know what life skills that they short of.
Oh, I agree with you saying. I'm not saying that is not what education is about. I am saying that it should happen in the home. That is the only thing that I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So that when that child comes to school, the teacher can better add to what is already there. I give you a classic example. It was this young girl, and she would come to class every day with her head down. And for a minute, I said to myself, wow, this kid's lazy, whatever. But until I got to know her, I come to realize that she had a 10-month-old child that she was caring for. And so me building that relationship with her, I started to understand. And so by me understanding her, I augmented her lessons, her curriculum to benefit what she was going on. I'm not saying teachers are not supposed to be that director, that mentor for a child. I'm just saying it should be an entree instead of being that holistic piece. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I'm saying.
And I'm gonna disagree. And I know we probably got to get moving for time's sake. But you know, I heard it should be. I can't worry about what should be happening at home. And we have to take a comprehensive whole child approach. But let's be honest, we're talking about three generations of students that have been pushed out and dropped out themselves and are now parents. So we're talking about the deterioration of the family, abject poverty. We're talking about drug epidemics where drugs have been pushed down into the urban core. Let's have these real discussions about why parents aren't. We're talking about mass incarceration. That's why fathers aren't in the home. You know, and this was systematic and institutionally done to impact people of color, black folk. So let's have that conversation and talk about why it's not happening in the family. So now, where we are, okay, three generations in, what can I do to support this child that I see every day? And what can I also do to support this parent as they learn to support their children in their education? That's what I want to talk about.
Sharon,
let me just give you this example here of a child that have a support system now. Yeah. Okay, she went off to college at LSU. It's a friend of the family. So I'm talking family. Okay, she's in college. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She told her grandmother that she's ready for a checking account now. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Her grandmother told her, you gotta have some money to put in there. No, you don't. Okay? You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
In college. And a bookworm. Support network. But no common sense.
Mm.
See? Thinking that you can just open a checking account, ain't got to put no money in there, and you can just be writing checks?
This, I want to say, it's so tough to end this conversation because we do have another segment and a break to go to. But it's been such a rich discussion and clearly one that we need to continue to dive into and have and act on as well. I do think that we are in a time where what we used to believe, certain definitions that we used to use, even the definition of, and James Baldwin, is it a fire next time? Either that, no, I think it was something else I was reading, but they said, like, people who believe themselves to be white, and then that's for us too, people who believe themselves to be black, and what does that mean?
Yes.
And those are things that we have just taken on and not even realized that it's a term somebody made up.
Right.
You know, we don't even question those terms in and of themselves. But I think this has been, I know that it has been a very fruitful conversation and one that speaks to our innate need and desire to know that we are a community and that we are our own village of people, and that the way we see family is expanding. The way we see education is expanding. And that's why we're not able to stay where we are, because when you outgrow shoes, your feet let you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are now. So,
and I'm hoping, what I'm thinking I hear is maybe you haven't identified a problem and you're on to a solution with the young people now that this can change.
Absolutely.
The young people now can change the cycle because you have figured out, this has been systematically foisted upon us for all of these years.
Absolutely.
But we can change it.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the hope.
Well, thank you so much, Joe, Katina, and Shariki, for joining us this afternoon and having this conversation. And we may try to have another spin on it again because clearly we can keep going with it. But thank you so much for having it. And thank you, everyone, for staying tuned with Every Woman. We are going to take a break and we will be back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shariki. Thanks.
August 2nd is primary election day in both Missouri and Kansas. Election to vote in Missouri by July 6th or in Kansas by July 12th. Voters like you will decide the many contested primary elections. Attend at Johnson County League of Women Voters Forum to get to know your Kansas candidates. More information is available at lwvjoco.org. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Josie Records and KKFI present a Crossroads Music Fest showcase at the Replay Lounge in Lawrence, Kansas, July 9th at 6 p.m. on the patio. This Josie Records-sponsored KKFI benefit to highlight the musicians playing the Crossroads Music Fest will feature Street Level Uprising.
Who ever knew we could make weapons of beating cats in?
Heidi Lynn Gluck.
I was her, the only girl in the room. I drink and twirl and smile.
And Nicholas St. James.
Lord, is it like this everywhere?
This 2016 Crossroads Music Fest showcase at the Replay Lounge, July 9th on the patio from 6 to 9 p.m. is a $3 donation to KKFI. $20 advance tickets go on sale on July 8th, but we will have them for $15 at this and all other CMF showcases. Learn more at cmfkc.com or kkfi.org/events.
KKFI is a proud sponsor of the Kansas City Museum's Summer Concert Series, presenting an afternoon of music with Harmony Project KC and the Kansas City Symphony, Sunday, June 26th. Kicking off the museum's Summer Concert Series, the students of Harmony Project KC will perform live with members of the Kansas City Symphony, starting at 4 p.m. on the historic grounds of the Kansas City Museum at 3218 Gladstone Boulevard and KCMO. No tickets necessary. More information is available at kansascitymuseum.org.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein on the next Eco Radio KC on Monday at 6 p.m.
All right, and we are back. Sharon, do you want to kick this off as you close the door?
Yes, okay. Yes. Candy?
Yes, I'm
good.
Here.
Candy Birch is on the line with
us. Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? Can she hear me?
Yeah. Uh-oh, sorry. Can you hear Candy?
I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Candy Burch is with the League of Women Voters in Johnson County. She's special director in former times that might have been called the president, I believe.
Yes, you're right.
And we just ran a little spot for the League of coming up. I don't know if you heard it or not.
I did. That was Dr. Ann Sanders. She and I did a couple of those PSAs for KKFI, and thank you so much for running that.
Great. And now you've got a couple of forums coming up in Johnson County. Do you want to tell our listeners where these are coming up? Because it's so important to become an informed voter.
And I'm just so happy that you have given me this opportunity. I mean, like KKFI, we don't endorse parties or oppose parties or candidates or anything like that, but we are really committed to in educating and informing the voters. So these two events are really pretty cool. We're having one on Sunday at Colonial Church Prairie Village, and those are for kind of the northern districts in the county. Starts at 2:00, and we have invited all 11 candidates who are in contested in primary races, you know, where there's somebody who is contesting them. And so we've invited 11 so far. We have 5 who have said yes to be there, and that's Sunday at Colonial Church in Prairie Village.
And what time is that?
Say that again?
What time is that?
At 2:00, we'll go from 2 until 3:30. The format's pretty informal. At the beginning, we will have each candidate give a short introduction and talk about their views, and then they will be available to talk individually with voters who are in their district or want to know about their platforms, and they will be there at separate tables to be able to do that. So we're very excited about that. The bigger, there's going to be a we've invited 24 candidates to another event, which is the same format, and that's at the Blue Valley Caps Building on 149th Terrace. That's on Wednesday, the 29th, from 7:00 until 9 p.m., and that's an evening thing. And those districts are, again, on our website. Is it okay if I just give you that website?
That would be great.
www.lwvjoco.org. And so that we're right there on the website, and more information is about that. You might have seen some our ad in the Kansas City Star as well, but we are very excited about this opportunity to bring the candidates in to talk to the voters who are interested in knowing more about what they stand for and what they plan to do. So again, we've invited all of them. Hopefully they'll all attend. And again, it's just about information. It's not about us endorsing anybody. We just want to educate and get people registered to vote and voting in an informed manner.
And the League was formed, gosh, it was one of the first women's organizations, I think, right after.
Right. The same year that women got the right to vote, we were formed. And so we're in 2020, we will be the League, the National League will be celebrating its 100th anniversary. And it's pretty darned exciting. I went to my first national convention this a couple weeks ago, and it's very exciting to know that we have made our way into so many different areas where we can really impact things like making sure democracy works for every single kind of person, whether it's a millennial, a single mom, an African American, Hispanic, or Asian American. I'm really excited about all the kinds of ways that the League works to engage our voters and to really protect their rights. I was just listening to you, the former guest that you had, and I that passion that they have is really the passion that I have in our members. We have 200 members in the Johnson County League, working with all the people in Kansas. And that's the kind of passion that we want to get people to really vote their self-interest. We really work and study issues, and we really want our people to understand that it's not about a party or a candidate. It's really about issues and what can they do to engage in those. So
Right. And some of the issues that you have talked about in the past, if you could name some of those, because I know those have been important educational forums, too.
Oh, absolutely. Our monthly meetings that are held on the first Saturday of the month starting in September, they have just been fabulous. We have wonderful experts that come and, whether it's one speaker or panel speakers, we talk about education, we talk about local issues like even our Johnson County Courthouse, we talk about voter suppression, we talk about voter rights. The Kansas League just won an award at the National Convention because they were instrumental in that lawsuit where about 20,000 people were taken off the rolls because of they thought they were registered voters, but there was something that suppressed them, and they were, because they didn't offer their proof of citizenship, so they were just, arbitrarily taken off the rolls. And that has been resolved, and that has been, they were wrong, those people were found to be wrongfully disenfranchised. So those are the kinds of things that we really want to do. We want to protect the rights of people. We want to get all of our people who have the opportunity to vote, to vote in an informed manner. Education is a big deal for us, as is elder care. We deal with government. We deal with social policy. Environment is a big issue for us as well. At National Convention, we were just talking about a big issue now that's nationwide, obviously, and that's behavioral health. What is our mental health state right now, and how can we help engage in that conversation and learn more and help those people who are having difficulties with their own behavioral health? That was very exciting to me to learn that the league will use its educational power, its research power to help better that situation.
I just thought of something controversial. Does the league have a stand on gun control?
That's an interesting question, and I wish I'd looked at that up, because I'm looking at our policies now, and here's what it says, it's just a summary of that. It says, protect the health and safety of citizens through limiting the accessibility and regulating the ownership of handguns and semi-automatic weapons. So, yes,
we do at the national level,
and so, yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. That's just an area that just boggles my mind, that we mm-hmm. can't come to some consensus, that it's just so far out of hand. Nobody needs a weapon that can kill 50 or 100 people. An assault weapon, my gosh, should not be in the hands of anyone.
Yeah. We had a wonderful program months ago where we had several speakers, one of whom was a professor at UMKC talking, and he had worked for the Brady Commission, when Tim Brady, and he had worked with that commission. We had Moms Demand Action for Common Sense Gun Control. That it was just so informative, so interesting, and again, every meeting that I go to, that I have to tell you, that's the reason why I'm a member right now, is every meeting I attend, I come away knowing more about the issues, really knowing the, more facts and backstories. We did one on a refugee resettlement just a while ago. And the programming for this coming up year is pretty exciting. Money, 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 and politics is one that's coming up. And so I just feel like we have so much to offer, to people, and all of our meetings are open to the public. You don't have to be a member to attend.
And when are your meetings, and where are they?
Right. We have our meetings the first Saturday of the month, unless, of course, there's a holiday. So the first Saturday of the month, and it's, again, on our website. And then we meet at Atonement Lutheran right off of Metcalf and a little north of 103rd Street, obviously in Johnson County. And we've had our meetings there.
You've had your meetings there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, 9 o'clock.
Oh, it's 9 a.m.
We have refreshments starting at 8:30, but we start the meeting at 9. We try to be respectful of people's time, try to be, you know, done at by 10:30. But really, we're very respectful of the time that people give us on a Saturday morning.
Well, Candy, give us those forum locations and dates and times again one more time, and then we'll let you go.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, well, our first one is coming up Sunday. It is at Colonial Church in Prairie Village. That address is 7039 Mission Road. It starts at 2 and will end at 3:30. And again, 11 candidates have been invited. We're expecting 5 for sure. And those are District 17, 21, 39 at the House, and District 21 for the Senate race. Then on Wednesday evening, June 29th, our program will start at 7. It'll end at 9. It's at the Blue Valley Caps Building at 7501 West 149th Terrace in Overland Park. And again, we have 24 candidates from 11 districts. The remaining 11 districts will be there. I do want to remind people that they must be registered to vote by Tuesday, July 12th here in Kansas. I believe it's Wednesday, July 6th in Missouri, but we definitely want people to be registered to vote in that August 2nd primary.
Well, thank you so much, Candy Birch, Special Director of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County. We'll have you back to tell us about what's upcoming with the League for the general election.
So excited to tell you everything that's going on. It's a great day to be involved.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you to all of our guests for coming on and making it a conversation here at Every Woman every Saturday at 3 p.m. Thanks for everyone who's listening online as well at kkfi.org. And as we break to get out of here, please stay tuned. And you'll hear Donna Wolf with Urban Connections, and then later MC Richardson with Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. Stay cool today and have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Women who gave up their name.